Let us recapture the last three lectures or seminars. We are hearing about the four principles of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught through his devotees. He did go through his devotees to make his points more emphatic or more with force. And we have heard from the life of the devotees that really these principles were quite strongly present, and their lives spelled them even more strongly, especially yesterday's principles of, I think you remember, forbearance, yes, something which we are in the West not very strong in applying. We had Haridas Thakur's glorious example. There was simplicity represented by Damodar Pandit's dealings, and then sense and mind control. Today we will enter another quality which is like an ocean, and therefore we will not be able to finish it in one day. We have reserved 2 days for this principle. It is, of course, humility, taught by Sanatan Goswami. So before starting, I really feel it is appropriate to tell you something of the speaker. The speaker today is Sachinandan Swami, a very unfortunate soul who's not very humble, and who will try to speak about humility. I remember when I became a devotee, my rich auntie, who's a millionaire, very highly posted in German society, said, "I hope that you will be humble. If the Hare Krishnas can teach you to become humble, then they are my movement." I met her a few months ago and asked her, "How am I doing, auntie?" She said, "I will observe you for 1 year and then I will tell you." So I'm in the test of my auntie. Before joining, another very good friend of mine said, "Before you become a monk, I will tell you a story." And he told me a story from the Sufi tradition. There was in, I believe, Baghdad or somewhere, a very wealthy and capable female doctor, a woman doctor, who had one son, and she gave this son to a Sufi teacher, a mystic. After 10 days, she came to visit her son and see how he was feeling within the training. And she saw that her son was cleaning the toilet. Disappointed, she went to the Sufi master and said, why is he cleaning the toilet? I gave him for education to you. I can supply 10 Turkish slaves. I hope no one is from Turkey and will take objection. I can give you 10 Turkish slaves. They can clean your toilets. Let my son, who's from a good family, be nicely educated and sit. The Sufi guru said to the doctor, lady, "My dear doctor, When you have a patient who needs medicine, to whom is this medicine which you prescribe given? To the patient or to his slaves? Lady doctor was a little excited and didn't get the point immediately and said, why are you asking such a foolish question? Of course, the medicine is given to the needy person, the patient, who came to me, not to his slaves. And the Sufi master said, aha, your son came to me for training. Your son has a disease, the false ego. Now, the medicine to wash toilets and become a humble servant is to be administered to him only, not to any foreigners, the Turkish slaves. So, especially with this point, my dear devotees, with the other points also, but especially with this point, I would really request you, if you want to take full benefit out of this lesson, wash the toilets. I'm sorry to be so blunt in the morning. I really mean it with the best of intentions. Because my friend said this to me, and when I joined the temple in Hamburg, and the service for toilet cleaning was, the temple commander said, we have to do this. I voluntarily raised my hand and said, I will do it, and I will commit myself for 50 years to this service. The temple did not exist for so long. But I remember discussions. I felt the process of Krishna consciousness is not really working with me. I do not, my heart has not become softened. And whenever each year the service of the bathroom cleaning, including the toilet, was ascribed, I remembered what my friend had told me. I remembered this story, and I must say I really fought for cleaning the toilet. If any one of you needs some particular advices how to clean it, I must say about this subject I could write a book, which would be authoritative. I have really applied all my intelligence to this subject matter, and I hope I will remain doing service of cleaning, cleaning my heart for a long time to come. You can be very simple. You can be very sense and mind controlled. You can be also very tolerant. I heard that Mr. Stalin was taking his operations, surgical operations, without anesthesia. He tolerated the pain. You can have all these qualities, but if it is not grounded on humility, these qualities will turn against you. You can, in other words, be simple, but be proud. I'm so simple. I'm so sense and mind controlled. And I'm so tolerant, and become really the opposite of a devotee with these qualities. As I said, Mr. Stalin was tolerant to physical pains, but he is one of the greatest murderers in the history. His murderers by far exceed the murderers of the number of murders of Adolf Hitler. So let us be now very intent on this practice of humility, And I would really like to request all of you to listen to this presentation and also to listen in between the lines of this presentation. Many things cannot be expressed because of my own disqualification and of reasons of time. Listen to them, and if you leave this room and you take one of two points and apply them in your life, you will see a dramatic change to the better. You will get some ruchi, some taste, some nicer Vaishnav relationships, and so on and so forth. Therefore, I wanted to introduce this lecture with a personal comment, and I want to request you to forgive me. I'm not so qualified. I come from a civilization where humility is seen as a weakness. Hare Krishna. And okay, but I will try anyways. So we will start. It's an exciting subject, and I need some space to move. all right. There is a verse in the Brahma Vaivata Purana which says that between the jiva and God is a mountain called the mountain of false ego. Because of false ego, we cannot perceive the Lord any longer, but our intelligence becomes viparyaya smriti, misdirected. It is like wind which cannot go over the mountain. It just circles before the mountain and comes back. Our smriti, our intelligence and memory does not go beyond the false ego. It always stops before, and we turn towards back to the material energy. As long as someone is proud, his spiritual endeavors, like the wind, will return to the material energy very comfortably. Therefore, in his very important work, Madhurya Kadambini, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that the whole purpose of spiritual culture is to transform the two ingredients of false ego, that is the concept of aham, I am, and mameti, this is mine. Instead of thinking under the control of false ego with a reversed intelligence, I am a German or American or man or whatever, you think, I am a servant of Krishna. That's the goal, this paradigm shift. And instead of thinking, this is mine, these are things which are my interest, you think, Krishna is mine. Now this transformation is so awesome. Awesome, or what would be a better word? So gigantic in its proportions, that this subject comes up at the very, towards the very end of the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the 12th canto. It is known that the false ego is the basis of our material existence. And to destroy it, the false ego, so that the real identity can emerge, is really the biggest task ahead of the spiritualist. And therefore, Shukadev Goswami, at the very end of his sermon, or sermon is preaching to Parikshit Maharaj, brings this point to the forefront of Parikshit's attention. He says there are four types of annihilation. in this world. The constant annihilation, that is what happens every day in our bodily cells. Some old cells die, or by the seasonal changes, nature, things in nature are annihilated. Maybe the leaves fall from trees and so on. Constant, the constant change of the material energy is the first type of annihilation. The second annihilation, on a even a larger level, or more visible level, is the occasional or nimitika annihilation, which takes place during the night of Lord Brahma. You know, each time Lord Brahma goes to take his night rest, the three planetary systems underneath Satyaloka are all annihilated. So then when Brahma wakes up in the morning, he again has to create what has just been destroyed in the night. Then there is what is called the total or material, the total annihilation. It's called prakritika. It's after Brahma has completed a lifetime of 100 years in his calculation, then the whole material creation is annihilated. But don't worry. I mean, worry is maybe not the word, but let us not make a mistake. It comes back again in the circle of coming and going. Now, so we have now three types of annihilation. Can you suspect what could be the final or the fourth type of annihilation? Hare Krishna. Yes, someone has spoken. The annihilation of the ego. Because only when the material ego of the living entity is totally annihilated, she will not again come to this material world. As long as the ego is not annihilated, even when there is the total material annihilation, the prakritika, the souls will just go into Mahavishnu. Mahavishnu will turn deep blue because of the accumulated desires which are based on the ego of the souls. And even bluer than he is blue already. When the time comes, he exhales, and he again exhales the universes, then also the souls will be brought there through his glance. We will, in other words, come and go, come and go, come and go. Even when the material universe is no longer there, as long as our ego is there. Therefore, to transform the ego is really the greatest work of any spiritual process. It's serious. It's intense. It's Krishna. Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. I don't know if I can communicate it to you. It's grandiose. It is something very, very big, which we are here. My dear devotees, I have seen so much in my own life and in the lives of others. I have traveled through many spiritual movements. I'm also now, quite long in this. The ISKCON movement, and it is. We have to speak honestly. There is so much ego everywhere, especially in one's own heart, that it's sometimes disappointing to see. It is sometimes when we approach these subjects of humility, you go, "My God, will it be possible?" And so on. So therefore this discussion will be a very careful discussion, and we will move very carefully in this direction, and you will at times not be able to believe your ears. Because humility, and this is very important at the outset of our discussion, defies all the laws of material nature. It is practically not existent in this material nature, in its purest form. And it can only be understood by the mercy of the devotees and of Krishna. It is not something the rational intelligence can understand. You will see this point especially, and I will remind you especially, that it's inconceivable when we turn to Sanatana Goswami's example. It is really inconceivable how he is humble and so on. Now, to make the subject easy and us hopeful, I would like to distinguish between three types of humility. I found this very nice, my dear superior friend and devotee Radhanath Maharaj spoke about this, and I really liked his insights in this. He says there are three types of humility. Please see if you can follow this line of thought. The first type is real humility. The second type is false humility, and the third is in between humility. What is real? What could be real humility? Well, it's a natural state of consciousness, and it comes through the purification of the heart. A little later, I can actually say this verse now because it's a very nice shloka. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami describes this real state of humility, and it will almost sound paradoxical as you hear it. I will just chant it for you in Sanskrit, not Sanskrit, Bengali. Premera svabhava yahan premera sambanda se mane Krishna mora nahi prema ganda. Nahi prema ganda means not even a smell of love, a scent of love. Here's the translation. Wherever there is a relationship of love of Godhead, its natural symptom is that the devotee does not think himself a devotee. He's very humble. When he has love, he will think, no, I don't have. Instead, he always thinks that he hasn't even a drop of love for Krishna. This is the Premi Bhakta. He's so humble, even in the presence of his humility, he sees, I don't have. It is not with me. I'm very sorry. So this humility is described like this, that the moment you think you have it, you don't have it. It's immaterial. You know, let me say, I'm without a microphone. Now I have a microphone. I have it. It's in my hand. But the humility is like this. Let us say, I have no humility. And then I'm humble and I think, I'm now humble. The moment I think I am not humble, it leaves me and it's not with me any longer. It is something which, for the material sense, doesn't make any sense. Hare Krishna. Anyways, the real humility is a spiritual state, not a material state of awareness. And it is described to be a natural state of consciousness, which comes when the heart is purified. False humility, what is this? When you think you are humble, at that moment the humility leaves you. It's just... It's amazing. It's amazing. And instead, in its stead... hope this is an English word. Humility leaves, and in its stead, is this correct? Oh. In its place, even better. In its place enters the opposite of humility, which is pride. This is what we are dealing with, my dear devotees. It defies our material thought, and maybe I will not speak about this much longer, because you will all fall asleep. It cannot be thought of. It cannot be grabbed. So, very often, those who are seem to be most humble, they are most proud. They somehow get a halogen light on themselves, and in the halogen light, then I just gave a donation. I can't tell you how much it is. It was so much. I'm very humble. I don't tell you this. This is pride. Therefore, a devotee who knows about Krishna conscious subject matter will never make a public spectacle out of his internal realizations. He will know when I talk about this or make a public spectacle or public event out of it, oh, pride could enter. So then comes the third type of humility, which our Maharaj defined. He said it's an in-between state. You are sincerely trying to become humble. You are not yet humble. But you sincerely try, really, all sadhakas must try and practice this, and then you can become humble. In this trying, in this process of trying, the humility will enter and hopefully stay in your heart as long as we don't become proud. Hare Krishna. Yes, this was some thoughts on this. Now I would like to see if there is a question regarding what we have discussed so far. Please do not ask a question at this stage about the other seminar hours. I will just see if something is now there, because I will move in a different gear after this. And I will... You're with me. Good. Then we will go to the next subject. I would like to give you some points where you will be able to judge your own progress in in the art of becoming humble. I really feel that this test is something which we must do in private. In Europe, there are litmus tests. You can put some paper into a bodily fluid and find out how acidic your blood is and how acidic your body is. Obviously, you would do this test only in the private room, in the bathroom, not in the public. So in the same way, what we will hear now is some ways and means through which we on our own can find out how we are progressing. It will be very difficult if someone else tells us, you're not humble, Prabhu. It's best if we can tell this to us whenever we are not humble. Because there is so much. When the false ego finds out that you're going to attack it, oh, it gets obnoxious. Therefore, it's sometimes very difficult if someone corrects us. We react in a very difficult way. Correction must be dealt with very, very carefully. Even nowadays, if you are in the position that you are a guru and you are not careful how you correct your disciples, they can easily become so hurt that they are ready to relinquish the relationship, because the ego is just so heavy. Krishna. Krishna. One definition of humility by which you can check yourself is given by Srila Prabhupada in the 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. It's in the 8th to the 12th verse. He says, humility means that one should not be anxious to have the satisfaction of being honored by others. Again, yes, this is important. I will read it again. Humility means that one should not be anxious to have the satisfaction of being honored by others. Do you have you experienced maybe in your life how the heart is immediately satisfied if someone praises us? Our intelligence immediately becomes dysfunctional. It's like as if someone has put a paralyzing injection into our heart. You are so good. I wanted to say something, but now I can't remember anything. I'm so good. Why? What makes you feel like this? Some more, please. Yes, we hear it. And we become inflated. Yesterday I talked to a very, very nice devotee about a concept, the Lakshman Rekha, or a spiritual circle, where through spiritual practices, our spirituality and spiritual halo or spiritual atmosphere or influence becomes inflated, and we become protected by it. But you know, when this flattery enters our heart, it's almost, you can't almost do anything against it. You become paralyzed. Like our Gokuleshwari told us yesterday, that there is an escape panta now in Inishrat, not maybe on the island, but he is prancing through the forest, and her mother, who lives there, is highly afraid also of the children. What if the panta will chase little Vaishnavi and eat her? So they will send now. I know how it works. In our neighborhood, there was also an escaped lion once. Do you know that most of the lions in America are not in the zoo, but in private homes? Yes. The people keep lions in America. Hare Krishna. I heard. So they will send someone who will just shoot some. It's like a big thing like this. Tranquilizer. It will go in the panther, and all his wildness will go down, and he will say, "I will take a rest now." Sleep. This is how flattery is. It makes us dysfunctional. Therefore, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to say, "He who flatters me is my enemy. I don't want this in my life." Amazing, isn't it? So humility means that one should not be anxious to have the satisfaction of being honored by others. Hare Krishna. The speaker could hear the drop of a needle. So tense was his audience at this moment. Hare Krishna. Yes, we are discussing something serious, and thank you for being with me. Another aspect of humility is, humility means freedom from falsity. The Chinese philosophers say humility means the vision of reality. But we say something similar. It means the freedom from falsity. Because really, the truth is aham brahmasmi. I'm an eternal soul. Pride is a material quality and can only interact with another material quality. In other words, you cannot be proud of something spiritual. You may think I'm proud of being a devotee, but this type of pride will not be spiritual. It will be something mixed with something else. And we have heard in lectures here during the seminar about this subject matter. Aham brahmasmi, I am a pure spiritual soul. Everything which is on me now is a covering. It has nothing to do with me. And humility means a freedom from this covering, a freedom from this covering falsity. Another aspect, I will stop for questions after this. Humility is the beginning of any true spiritual knowledge. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur used to say, without humility it is not possible to have any knowledge which is actually actual. You may have some jnana, some mental informations revolving in your mind, but you do not have vijnana, something realized. Without humility, one is a show bottle spiritualist, and not a real one. Therefore, devotees who hear knowledge always know it's only possible to get knowledge in a humble role. Therefore, in the Indian way of learning, or the spiritual way of learning, or close to spiritual way of learning, one knows one has to have a spiritual teacher to whom one can submit. And one knows only if I'm humble will I get spiritual knowledge. Without it, I'm not getting spiritual knowledge. There are even spiritual teachers who don't accept proud disciples, because they know from the beginning they will not be able to teach them spiritual knowledge. There's a story which I heard in Vrindavan about one teacher. There was a guru, and one very, very talented gentleman from Bengal came and wanted to become his disciple. We have some wonderful Bengali Vaishnavs amongst us. So they will hear very attentively what their countrymen did. He came to the guru and said, I want to learn from you. And the guru said, look for someone else. Again and again and again he came. And finally the guru told him, only if you can bring me someone or something which is inferior to you in all respects, will I accept you as a disciple. This is my test. So the man thought, very easy, I just go out of the door and then grab the next person, bring him, and then I will be accepted. Because I'm very learned, I'm very strong, I'm very aristocratic, and I'm also not poor. Then he was just getting out and he wondered, can you come with me? But then he thought, well, this person, he may not be learned and aristocratic and so on, but maybe he can jump farther than I can jump. And he began to think about it a little bit more. And he thought, actually, all human beings have qualities which are different from the qualities of others. And in this way, we can never find someone who is inferior to us in all respects. Let me go to the animals. And he thought, he saw a donkey. A donkey is very foolish. I'm certainly more than a donkey. But then he thought, well, the donkey is extremely strong to carry heavy loads, which I am not. So he went and he went and went down the row. Finally, he was on the field producing the human pile. We were sitting, waiting, and when it manifested, the human pile, he saw a worm approaching with a happy smile. He thought, now I found something. This human pile is the most rejected substance, but the worm thinks it's a palace comes. This is a very insignificant being. He wanted to bring the worm for his guru after washing it and so on. But then he thought, wait a minute, the worm takes the most abominable substance and converts it into valuable manure. Is it manure? Or dung. A worm dung. Manure, I think it's called. So, I can't do that. The worm is superior to me in this quality. And he came back to his guru, Maharaj, and said, I tested. It took me a few months and I found out I could not find anyone who is inferior to me in all respects. I will leave you now. You can already imagine how the story goes. The guru said, come, sit down. You are now qualified. Humility is the beginning of actual knowledge, and we can see this in, for instance, Sanatana Goswami's life. He heard everything from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Then he said, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, now please bless me by putting your feet on my head so that the knowledge which you have given to me is not theoretical but becomes actualized in my life. The feet of someone on someone's head. This is humility. As a very humility, humble. Do you know that Krishna remained silently smiling as long as Arjuna talked and talked and talked and talked at the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita? Only when he came to this one verse where he said, I do not know, please instruct me, I'm confused. Then Krishna smiled more and then he began to speak. Without this humility, also Parikshit Maharaj could not obtain spiritual knowledge. He did not present himself to Shukadev Goswami as the king of the country, which he actually was. He said, I'm a Kshatriya Bandhu, that is not a real Kshatriya. I'm not really worthy to be called Arjuna's descendant. Please help me. And then Shukadev Goswami spoke. So this is a very important thing to know. Therefore, when we want to learn spiritual knowledge, we will have to touch the feet of the teacher. Because only by humility you develop the brain tissues to understand. Not on the mental, but on a deeper, on a spiritual level, what you are taught. Hare Krishna. In my own relationship to Srila Prabhupada, there were only a very, very few incidents which meetings with him But I remembered in every meeting, Srila Prabhupada made very clear where my position was. And I'm very, very grateful for this. For instance, in the last meeting which we had, he asked, "So have you understood our philosophy?" There were, I believe, about 10 devotees from our temple in his room, and he asked us, "Have you understood our philosophy?" Now, I was a BBT translator at that time, and had translated several of our books into the German language, and I thought I had understood the basic principles of Krishna consciousness. But from my previous meetings with Prabhupada, I was very careful. I knew he had something in his mind when he would ask the question. I had been a few times smashed by him in a loving way. So I just went to others, "You say." And they said things, and of course it was not right. Prabhupada looked at all of us, just shaking his head, as if we don't know anything. And he said, and I'm very happy, "First of all, you have to understand that life is eternal. Then," I was very shocked. I had not understood our knowledge. I had not been able to give this answer. And I rose up. And to my great embarrassment, I lost my dhoti before my spiritual master. The last time he saw me, I was somehow so nervous, or I had wrongly situated myself on the floor, and I was all in thinking when I got up, I didn't notice that it was not properly bound. I got up and good Prabhupada looked at me and he just smiled at me, saying one should always remain a fool before one's spiritual master. This is my teaching to you. Wonderful. Wonderful. I'm happy. I must be not proud that I lost my dhoti before my spiritual master. It's very embarrassing. I do not know if you can understand. Maybe it has never happened to you, but if you lose a dhoti, it is really the greatest defeat. There is no greater defeat. And I was so stunned, I couldn't immediately react and throw myself on the ground. I just looked like the fool number one. And I'm very glad. Srila Prabhupada taught us by his own utterances that he also would always refer in highly respectful terms to his spiritual master. He would often tell the story how he met him first and how he thought he knew anything, how he argued, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, "Let us first free the country from the grasp of the British, and then we will be able to preach. How can an unfree nation impress the world with something which comes from there?" And Prabhupada, he remember, then, "Of course, I was defeated by my spiritual master." And he says it with laughter and a great joy in his heart to be, so to say, defeated and be. I do not want to speak about my spiritual master in the way I can speak about my own relationship. You know what I want to say. This is the pride of a disciple. It is maybe not the right word, but you know, it's a good to be a little Nietzsche, a little down. And this, yes, this is the beginning of knowledge. Now I have glanced at the clock. My time is over. And there needs to be a 10-minute break so that we can get over to the next classes. Let me thank you very much. I promise tomorrow to leave ample space for questions. I would be extremely honored and happy if you come with questions which are prepared, which are in your mind and in your heart. We will talk a little bit more. I will just give you some litmus paper, some testing paper which you can use later for your own humility test. Now I'm just speaking about some aspects. We will do this, and then I will put something before your mind. So I thank you very, very much. I wish you a nice seminar day and a lot of strength and no tiredness in your mind and body. We go up till tomorrow, so we will make it. Srila Prabhupada ki, Shishi Goni Tai ki, Go Premanandi Hari Hari Bo. Hare Krishna.